Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, John T. Brown. We have a very exciting show tonight. Our topic tonight is the difference between socialism and capitalism in America today. We have a very dynamic individual on our show tonight. He has a doctorate in political science. He's written three books. And he is going to help educate us, the American people, on basically what socialism and capitalism is. I'm proud to say he's a good friend of mine. I've had the chance to dialogue with him many times. And even I was misled about the perception of socialism and capitalism. Dr. Jerome Hurley. Thank you, sir. How are you?
Thank you very much. Chauncey, as many times as we spoke, because you call me Professor, not by my last name, it's Hyler, H-Y-H-U-Y-L-E-R, but pronounced as if the U wasn't in it. I know you insist on referring to me as Professor, Mentor, things like that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But I'd like people to know exactly who I am so they can look me up on Facebook or on Twitter or on Amazon for my books.
Awesome. I'd like to just get right into things and ask you a couple of questions. You know, and the first question is I'd like to ask is, you know, why is today's discussion of capitalism and socialism a problem? And I guess part of it is because of my own misconception, as most people. Can you shed some light?
I think that's right. And socialism and capitalism are two terms bandied about very widely every day. Anyone who watches a news broadcast sees that there is a rising tide of socialism, especially for our young folks today, who in surveys say they prefer socialism to capitalism. Well, without understanding exactly what these terms are, because if you think about it, there should be some confusion in most people's minds, since capitalism and socialism are regarded as two opposing systems of organizing an economy. There's capitalism and there's socialism.
Then how do they exist simultaneously?
That is the big question and the problem, and that leads to all the confusion. Because the thing is that they do coexist. America is regarded as the preeminent capitalist country in the world, in fact, in history. And yet, here we have calls for socialist policies like universal single-payer health care, which is usually called socialized medicine, for free college tuition for the whole country, high progressive taxes, so many policies that have been long associated with socialism, and yet America, as everybody understands it, is capitalist. How can they both exist? The answer is that we don't think carefully enough about the very concepts we use. Our thinking is fuzzy. And I'll start with the idea of capitalism. That concept alone, the way it is commonly used, lends to confusion because, and this might sound strange, there is no such thing as capitalism the way we normally talk about it. What we call capitalism is a mixture of two very different kinds of arrangements. In the beginning, there was Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, and he depicted laissez-faire capitalism. That is where there is really a separation of the state and the market, in much the same way that for religious liberty, there's a separation of church and state. So laissez-faire capitalism is a system where everyone is free to gain, keep, use, trade, or otherwise dispose of their freely acquired possessions. That is laissez-faire capitalism. But then there's what is in some quarters called crony capitalism. And there, the government is not separate from a free enterprise system. State and market are intermingled so that the state does things that definitely affects the market. Not just in one way, but in two ways. When we think of the state penetrating the market and influencing the market, we generally think of regulations, which are restrictions or restraints on free trade for whatever reason. But the more significant factor is when governments don't restrict the market, but promote market growth. In other words, governments do things to promote economic growth, national prosperity, it's normally called progress. Now, this also takes away, is something not allowed by laissez-faire capitalism. It is a policy of government promoting economic growth. And it always results in government's promotion of certain economic interests in society. Mm. And usually at the expense of other economic interests. We can talk about some of the policies after I define these concepts. So what we commonly call capitalism is a mixture of two opposing models of capitalism. One is laissez-faire and one is crony capitalism. Free enterprise versus a system where government absolutely penetrates economic relations, usually in order to promote economic growth. But that's still not laissez-faire. That's not a separation of state and market. So that's how the term capitalism itself lends itself to confusion when we talk about it. And the point is, ultimately, if we can separate these two versions of capitalism, the laissez-faire version and the crony version of capitalism, we can begin to see which of these promotes genuine, sustainable economic growth and which has ended in all of the crises of capitalism that have actually led to social welfare reforms. In other words,
If it's okay, before you move into social welfare I have a question. If capitalism does not exist, and say, for instance, I considered myself a capitalist, does that mean that I'm not a capitalist as a result of your definition, but more so I'm in favor of free market? Would that be analogy that if I thought I was a capitalist, but based on our definition, I'm not, then would that mean I would support free market? Would that be a more accurate term rather than calling someone a capitalist? You would call them a free marketer?
Yes, or call them a defender of laissez-faire capitalism to distinguish from those who would come to the defense of crony capitalism, namely all of the lobbyists and lawyers who set up shop in Washington and try to influence the course of public policy. They are not advocates of laissez-faire capitalism. They love for government to interfere in the economy on their behalf, to give them subsidies, protective tariffs, a whole bunch of other policies that have begun, that began a long, long time ago. In fact, America has never practiced a pure laissez-faire capitalism. Government was involved from the very beginning. And in subsequent interviews over the next number of weeks, we can talk historically about how and why government became involved in promoting economic growth on behalf of, ironically enough, the capitalist classes. In other words, government engaged in political activity that affected the prosperity of some groups, promoted the prosperity for some groups, but ultimately at the expense of others.
Very, very informative. We are definitely going to have to do a part two, because this is a very complex issue, at least for the average person who has not studied socialism and capitalism in depth. Very, very thankful to have you on the show just to begin this conversation about how these
now,
two.
If we leave it at at this separation of the two systems that are falsely combined to call capitalism, but we separate it into the laissez-faire version and the crony version. And by the way, the crony version engages in corporate welfare, and that brings us to the definition of what socialism is, most basically. And once we understand that, we can discover a great many ironies within our economic system today. So I think socialism boils down to
you move into socialism, because I know that's going to be another extensive but brief comment. For those who are listening to the show, this is U.S. National Politics, the difference between socialism and capitalism in America today, and we have on our show Dr. Jerome Hyler, who has a Ph.D. in political science, and we want to thank him for being on our show. Yes, Professor. For the next part of the show, and I know we're going to have to do a part two, briefly go into what is socialism, because we're going to have to recap capitalism. We might have to do a whole show just on capitalism and another show on socialism after part two. But if you can briefly go into what is socialism in America today to give us a more clear depiction of how it actually exists.
Fortunately, identifying or pinpointing the essence of socialism is actually easier than untangling this mess called capitalism. Socialism, I think, may be boiled down to simple policies of income redistribution. In other words, under the laissez-faire system, property is privately owned. In other words, the way the founders would say it, property is simply the just fruits of honest industry, of honest labor, that a person is entitled to labor in the field to which he was called, as they would say in the 18th century, and to keep the just fruits of his honest labor. It belongs to him. Now, under socialism, we still enjoy private property to an extent, but really it's society that owns the property, not the individual who worked for it. Society, in the form of our politicians who decide what's right for society, own the property, and it's the politicians on behalf of society who determine how much property an individual may keep and how much he has to turn over to government, so that government can give part of it in one form or another to other individuals who didn't work for the property. It belongs to society, and so society, namely the political class, can determine how much each person is entitled to, and any extra belongs to society to give out to who it pleases or who needs it or who deserves it. And so socialism is most often associated with the social welfare state, with policies like Medicare, Medicaid, Obama phones, Social Security, and everything. But if you appreciate that the essence of socialism is income redistribution, then you have to wonder what happens when income is being redistributed, not to the poor or the downtrodden, but distributed to the capitalists themselves. In terms of all the lobbying that takes place in Washington and in state capitals, subsidies are giving out.
Right, to circumvent socialism. I personally don't believe in income redistribution. I believe whatever you earn, you should be able to keep. I am in favor of limited government. I don't believe that government should dictate to society. I believe government's role is to assist in the well-being and the welfare of society, but not to support
society. Now, hold it,
Chauncey.
If you say the well-being and the welfare of society, that is open to alternative definitions. Who's to say what the welfare of society is? I think it's more precise to say that government's role is to be a protector, protecting us all in the enjoyment of what is ours, our lives, our liberties, our labor, and the fruits of labor, namely our possessions. I think that's more exact. It is precisely because the general welfare can be so equivocally understood that government can do almost anything, since whatever it says is the general welfare, is the general welfare, and government can engage in redistribution. I would make the additional point that since, as I say, and this is what we can go into more detail with in subsequent interviews, since I say that the essence of socialism is income redistribution, and from the very beginning of the country, government engaged, the federal government engaged in distributing income through a lot of different policies, it's ironic but true that the first socialists in America were the many capitalists who ran to government for different forms of assistance. That tells you just how confused this concept of capitalism is, where you have the first capitalists being the first socialists as well. In other words, the ability of government to redistribute income is really always amounts to the ability to pick winners and losers. That's what it means to redistribute income. If it's in the hand of society, if it belongs to society, and if it's Congress that determines what individuals in society are entitled to, then whoever Congress chooses to shower special benefits, privileges, immunities on is a part of socialism more than capitalism, even though the essence of laissez-faire capitalism is private property. Individuals are still free to own their businesses, to make profits, to hire whoever they want, to work for whoever they want, and are only entitled to the salaries that they are working for, and only entitled to give up to their workers as much salary as the workers agree to for the hours they spend working. That's why we can have socialism amidst capitalism, that a good part of the system is still a free economic system, a free enterprise system. Government doesn't own all of the companies, as does China or the Soviet Union used to. Government doesn't own and run and manage all of the companies. They are still privately owned, but the fruit of the owner's labor, his property, it really belongs to society and really can be redistributed as government, as Congress pleases. So I think that covers the two sides of capitalism. And the reason, the most important reason for making this distinction that I made.
Well, actually, my last question towards the end and I don't know if you could tie it into what you're going to say, if we adopt this distinction, how does it help us?
Because finally, after more than two centuries of experience with a free enterprise system, with both forms of capitalism and the socialism that has existed, we can determine which the laissez-faire free market system or the corporate welfare system allowed for sustainable, genuine economic growth. Was it laissez-faire, or was it the corporate welfare state? Or was it corporate welfare, the government regulating and promoting economic growth, regulations to restrain free enterprise, but the other side of the corporate welfare state is government acting through positive measures to promote national growth and what they call economic progress? Was it the laissez-faire system, or was it the corporate welfare state that led to all of the crises of capitalism? Now, let me talk just a second about those crises. Throughout the history of capitalism, there were what are called boom and bust business cycles. There was a time when the economy was booming, unemployment was low, businesses were opening and growing, and wealth was spreading, but then there would be a crash. It was mostly called panics. And these panics were followed by long periods of hardship around the country. Well, the thing is that since we don't have a clear distinction of what capitalism is, the panics and hardships, and let me just interject and say that the following years were all moments when the economy crashed and hardship began spreading. The first depression the country faced was in 1792, in April of 1792. There was another crash in 1819, and then 1837, and then 1857, and then 1873, and 1893, and 1907, and of course, the great stock market crash of 1929, and then the savings and loan debacle in 1987, and then the housing crash of 2008. By distinguishing laissez-faire capitalism from the corporate welfare state, a very different kind of system, and really opposed to laissez-faire, we can determine which of these two elements within what we today call capitalism led to sustained, genuine growth, and which set of policies led to these artificial booms in the economy that led to doom eventually, when these artificial conditions just went bust, spreading unemployment and hardship across the land. That's why it is important to distinguish between the dynamics of a laissez-faire free market and the dynamics of a corporate welfare state. Now, what my research has done, researching all of the years of panic and the ensuing depressions, is the finding that it was that the many panics and depressions the country experienced originated not with free market activity, but with corporate welfare policies. And it was those corporate welfare policies that crashed the economy, that led to the progressive era reforms and the New Deal reforms, because it was decided that capitalism doesn't work. We have to create a social welfare state. So it was the panics caused not by free market activity, but by corporate welfare policies that created the quote-unquote need, demand, and excuse for social welfare reforms from the Progressive Era to the New Deal to the Great Society and beyond. Now, that is a stunning observation. If it is true, then it was the compromise with laissez-faire, the repudiation of laissez-faire, and the emergence of the corporate welfare state that actually led to the problems blamed on capitalism, but were really the result of this renegade capitalist system of corporate welfare.
Thank you, Doctor. You really informed us intricately of this complex issue of socialism and capitalism in America today, and we're definitely looking forward to having you back for part two next week. But before we close out, I have a question, because as I'm listening to you talk, this country was set up as a republic. When did it change to a corporate entity?
You mean when?
Because really,
when
we're not
the...
a country. We're a corporate entity, and all levels of government are microcosms of corporations.
Well, our state governments and our cities.
You have a minute. You have a minute if you can respond to that in a minute.
Our local governments are all incorporated. You'll see signs entering any city incorporated
right.
in what year and everything. But we are still a republic, and we are a country made up of many republics on all levels. The question is, when, why, and how did we stop holding everyone as equal in terms of their measure of freedom that they possess? And when did we start making some individuals pay for other individuals? In other words, when did the government take money from the taxpayers in one form or other to give out subsidies to corporations? When was the corporate welfare state born? And the answer to that question is, it was born the day the second bill passed by Congress was signed into law by our first president. The Tariff Act of 1789 can rightly be regarded the origin of the corporate welfare state in America. It benefited some individuals, namely the manufacturers, who didn't have to face international competition because of the tariff walls, but it hurt farmers and planters who had to buy their manufactured goods in artificially higher prices due to the tariffs and the reduction of international competition, but get whatever the market will fetch them for their cotton and their other agricultural products that they sold. So it benefited some individuals at other individuals' expense, and that can be regarded as the kind of income redistribution policy I'm talking about that belongs not to the laissez-faire free enterprise system, but to a corporate welfare state.
Doctor, we're out of time tonight. I want to thank Dr. Jerome Hyler, Ph.D. in political science, talking about the difference between socialism and capitalism in America today. This is U.S. National Politics Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We will be back here next Tuesday for part two with Dr. Hyler, between the difference of socialism and capitalism. We want to thank you again for coming on the show. Unfortunately, we're out of time, Dr. Hyler, but we will be in touch soon. I want to thank all our listeners, and you can follow us and like us at U.S. National Politics 101 at Facebook.com. Once again, we thank you, and we will see you next Tuesday. Have a good evening. Good night.
Thank you, Chauncey.
You're welcome very much, sir. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.